gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
And we are back. It has been quite a while, and it's not a normal episode today because we are hitting a three-way crossroads, a fork in the roads with this show. We're going to continue to do some episodes on film and art with Kurt, and we will do other episodes. I'm going to be doing episodes with my friend, Robert Peter. Robert, say hello.
How's it going, people? Good to be here. Thank you for having me. Much appreciated.
And yeah, this is our first little go at it, but we will be doing episodes exclusively on magic, spirituality, metaphysics, practice, and etc. Yeah, very stoked to be doing this.
So yeah, I think it's quite a prominent time to be doing anything in regards to revival, especially in the supposed darkest time of the year. Because I think in regards to magic, magical practice, anything to do with the occult and spirituality, being in the age of Mercury, or Ophiel, as the Arbitel dictates, we can get lost in too much information. So it is super cool, really, really great opportunity just to sort of be doing a grassroots show, if you will, bringing things back to the streets, as some hip people might say. But yeah, it's just really good to be doing this. So yeah, it's quite cool at this time of year, just going straight into it, because it gives us an opportunity to have some downtime, and sort of like realize exactly where we're at. But I think it's also super important because it shows us just how bright our flame actually burns, especially when you've got like a lot of stuff going on in your life, like especially magically learning new practices, and just sort of expanding upon other ideas. You get to see what flame shines brightest, so you can see which path to follow. I know, speaking personally, that this time of year has shed great light, excuse the pun once again, on exactly what I should be doing. So how about you, Rev? Can you say the same?
Yeah, definitely. One thing that the winter always does is it points out the weak points. It like articulates very precisely what areas need work in your life and what are the weak things that like you're not going to make it till spring if you don't see to them. And some things, you know, aren't that urgent necessarily, but it does have a way of doing that. And I feel like when you hit this middle point, there's something about like lighting the candle and like walking the rest of the way that really aligns with that. Like, because the work, a lot of the work I feel like at this point is done, you know, the tending to the farm, the mending of fences and such. And then at this point, it's like you've got your ducks in a row, you've sorted some things out, and now it's time to just like trudge forward and endure and look for what's coming.
Yeah, definitely. 100% agree with that. I mean, like, coming from the Christ-centric background that I, yeah, come from, basically. Sorry for my incredibly British sense of speaking. But yeah, it's basically like if you take the myth, I guess, or the story of the Annunciation at heart, it really can sort of shed light, once again. Sorry, I'm terrible with my choice of words tonight. But it can shed light on exactly what you need to do. It's kind of like if you look at the world that was happening around, say, like Mary and Jesus and things like that, it was like there wasn't really a lot happening. And there, like, it kind of came to a standstill. And in a midst of all of that sort of decay and decay, I guess is the best way to put it. You don't need to further elaborate on that. is that you had this rebirth, if that makes sense. It was like a rebirth of a new way of doing things, and then what came from that obviously is the whole entire story of Jesus and everything that transpired from that. And then obviously we still talk about that today in regards to Christianity being, I guess, the world's most well-known and widespread religion. So it just goes to show that, like, whatever you kind of craft in these dark times has great potential to echo for eternity, or at least your lifespan on this earth. So yeah, it's definitely a good time to kind of like take a step back and look at exactly what you want in life and exactly where you see it going, and then acting accordingly once that time comes around.
That makes a lot of sense. It also brought to mind for me, like, the idea of cultivating a strong inner flame, because the candle that you carry now that the sun is being reborn slowly, you carry through till the light is fully, back in force. It takes like a strong inner will and an inner strength and an inner flame to be able to like do those creative acts and those sort of personal barrier breaking things, or even just staying to the course and doing good work in these dark times. Like that extra force that there is whenever something is done in the face of adversity. Like the adversity here in the north, like here in Denmark, is actually the dark. Like it's the dark and the cold, and it wears you down. So like I just really vibe with that inner flame idea of like you need it because you're actually weathering the darkness. Like you're holding out. There is also, the other side of things, which is pretty prominent in my own practice, and that is like being really fond and just with my character in general, being very fond of the dark. And that's been like a big thing that's kind of driven me through my entire life, is like been made to be afraid of the dark as a child, and then that means like constantly drawn to it and wanting to be in it and amongst it so that I understand it, so that it can alleviate the fear. And I think there's a lot of that stuff going on too, like where you it's if you're willing to let a little of let yourself explore the darkness and better understand it, then it makes it a little bit less of a heavy load. And I don't even just mean shadow work and things. I mean like actually being like, in this state of light, not having sunshine, and just sort of like phasing into that and absorbing it in a weird way.
Yeah, definitely. No, I vibe with that. Definitely. It's really interesting. So like I want to touch on a couple of things, but like building off the back of that, I just want to say, like, in regards to sort of like the birth of Jesus, like when he was born, if you think about it, like he was born in a stable, you know? So according to history, he was born in a stable. But like he was born in really adversarial circumstances, right? So you had like loads of animals around him. Those animals probably weren't sanitized at all. So you had like all the germs, all the bacteria, all of the like adversarial circumstances. But yet he was still born and still flourished, you know? So it just goes to show that like great things can be born from adversarial circumstances. As a nice little segue, one of the things that I found in particular is that like when you have the darkness, you do see your own flame. You see like all the weaknesses, you see where things are, etc. But you also see the other flames that are around you, and that can be either like friends, family, like physical allies, or it can be spiritual allies as well. So like it's really, really great for like ancestor work, like discovering the relationships with your ancestors, discovering just how bright those flames are. for you and just how supportive they can be, but also like more say celestial or chthonic allies such as like angels and other things like that, which is great. I mean, like one of the struggles, I guess, or one of like the most commonly asked questions I get as a practitioner, for people, someone that helps people get to where they need to go, is like, what spirit is around me? You know what I mean? What spirits want to help me? But like, when you're in that moment, like by yourself in that darkness, it allows you to discover that by yourself. You know, like if you think about like in the sort of more mundane world, like people normally talk to their like past loved ones and things like at night. It's like the last thing they do, like when the day is done, when they're laying there like head on pillow and like, oh, I wonder how my grandma thinks. Like, I wonder if they're around me. You know what I mean? And like being in this time, it allows for that introspection. So you can explore that without just being in those that moment before sleep, you know? And I think that although yes, it is a time of year and everything else that in which you can do that in, sorry, it allows us to carry that lesson with us all the time throughout the year. So like even if it's like blazing sunshine outside, you know what I mean? Even if there's like summer parties and if everything's going good in life, like it enables us to say, hey, like we can still carry that lesson of the darkness with us at all times. And it also enables us to then teach that to other people as well, if they're willing to talk about it. So we can sort of deliver that message before this time comes around again in following years, so that when they are in that moment, they can experience it fully rather than it like just being another time before Christmas. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like essentially a mindfulness on like a grand scale, being mindful of the season and being like with it rather than just letting it be like this thing that's passing by while you're living your life. Something you said about like being in that time of darkness and then the other lights that appear, and I just struck me like it's there is always like more profundity, and when one is like walking that alone, and then the light shows up, right? Like when you are going through the darkness, and then the light actually shows up, like that feeling of like I haven't actually been forgotten, I am held, I am loved and cared for, like. If people are on a journey to like try and find who those spirits are for them, that way is always going to be more, it holds more profundity and more weight. But that being said, like if you need it, you need it. And sometimes like another person is absolutely part of that process too. But there's always going to be both in everyone's life. But like I just think those times when like you actually think you're alone and then the fucking beacon comes on and it's like,
Yeah, I think we've all been there at some point. I mean, like one thing that I've sort of come to be aware of is that sort of like I'm not just like gonna hammer Christianity here, I'm sorry guys. But like when you have the sort of like the paschal candle, right? Is that like the symbolism behind the paschal candle in traditional sense might be completely against this. But if you look at the fact that it has like Alpha Omega, like the beginning and the end, and then in the middle you have like all the other symbolism, it's basically that like you like if you light that flame, you know what I mean? Like you're putting that into like quote unquote manifestation. So it's a way of like you saying to these spirits or like these allies, hey, like I want this contact. And I think that's a really important thing to stress, is that like we have to want the contact. Like one of the most common things I see is people like wanting to find out about the Holy Guardian Angel, but I don't know if people would really know what to do with their Holy Guardian Angel if the Holy Guardian Angel actually showed up. Because of all the teachings that are currently out there. I'm not talking about like the esoteric teachings. I'm talking about like the more mainstream ones where like say New Age practitioners will say like, oh, they'll go and get you a parking space, you know what I mean? Or like they'll do this for you or they'll do that for you. And that's like a massive underutilization of like the prowess and the capabilities of a guardian angel.
Sounds like, oh, actually, I think what you're looking for is a demon or something.
Or like hook up, right? Like ask your guardian angel to like hook you up with someone. Like I don't think that's how it's gonna go down.
Well, yeah, that's just that's, I mean, personal gain, personal power. That's like why most people are initially attracted to this stuff, and then, I find a lot of the time the like breaths of fresh air are the people who got dragged into it, like they had no choice, but the people who kind of choose to get into the occult are often like seeking the wrong things, and then over time that may develop into a maturity, or that may not and may crash and burn. But yeah, definitely lost my train of thought there.
No, it's all good. It's really weird because like what I see from sort of like say New Age practitioners who are taught about like angels and stuff like that and whatever is that they have the very like materialistic mindset. Like not all of them, you know what I mean? But I'm talking about the ones that do. They have a very materialistic mindset of like wanting results, like wanting money, wanting girls or guys or whatever, right? And then you have like the more religious mindset where they won't actually ask their guardian angel for help at all because they think it's like too sinful or like they're in the mindset of perpetual repentance.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like finding that middle ground and being like, it's okay to ask for help. You know what I
Right.
mean?
Right. It's also a
And
lot of personal blockages people have that they like might not realize they have that are preventing contact in general. Like, there is, very common thing to have just a part of yourself being afraid of it, and that part that's holding back prevents like the fidelity of the experience that someone is consciously seeking,
Definitely. It's like sometimes when people discover the Holy Guardian Angel, they're like, oh, or like their guardian angel, same thing, I think, personally. But they'll be like, oh, like expecting these like great mysteries of God to be revealed to them. And it's like, yeah, you might get them, but not yet, you know? It's like learning to like, I guess being in a relationship with someone, you get to know the person first and then you delve into the greater mysteries of their being. It's not just like, here, have it all on a plate, you know what I mean? Because like, it's like secrets, right? Like you don't just tell secrets to anyone, because you don't know them, you know? And although like, I guess sometimes, yeah, you can, and it's great too, because like you form that bond straight away. Like that is about you recognizing that that bond's there. And the other person recognizing that that bond is there. Like, if neither party recognizes that that bond is there, then it's a slow process. You know what I mean?
For
So
sure.
like, they'll go at your speed. You know, so if you're like, right, like, I want to know you for who you are, like in regards to the angel, and this is how it is. Like, I want to know you. Teach me. Like, I think one of the prayers in the Arbitel, basically, says like send me one of your spirits or whatever, like something about having an open heart or open and contrite heart or something like that. But it's like having that humility to go and say, look, I don't know anything. You know what I mean? Teach me, you
Yeah,
know?
you're helping spirits tell you to get your shit together and like how to do that or help you with that. That literally is them giving you the secrets of God that you are equipped to handle right then because you are part of God. So like that is the secrets of God that you're ready for at that point,
Definitely. And it's just really interesting to like see people wanting like all of these like amazing things to happen like straight away. I mean, like going back to the Arbitel, like if you look at it, like the aphorisms are basically secrets of God, right? Like, and I think the first aphorism, like I can't open it because I'm currently on my phone and limited by technology right now. But it says like something along the lines of like for those to get secrets, you must know how to keep secrets. Right, so like they're not going to give you anything because I don't know, you might start shouting about it, right? So they might give you a whole list of secrets, and then like you're like, yeah, I'm going to make a crap ton of money off of this, and then go and write a book. And then you'll write that book, and I guarantee that like something will happen in the process of either writing that book or after you release that book that will then bring you back to like where you need to be. Whether that is like not being given any more secrets and then kind of being left in the wilderness, so to speak, or like there'll be some experiences that will lead you back on the path, maybe, whether that is deprivation or like further contact telling you that that was the wrong thing to do. You know, it's like you'll get the secrets and then you'll be told what to do with them, whether
Well,
that is.
I think like ruining your reputation with spirits is a very real thing in like the beginner to intermediate like levels of practice, because
Yeah.
at those points, someone the individual may not have successfully eliminated all their doubt of magic being real. Like you can have numerous powerful experiences, but there's still like pieces of you that are nagging at the tr nagging at that and like holding back, causing resistance. So there can be like a flippantness or a casualness to someone's practice that might not be appropriate, might kind of lead them into like a pit at some point. You know what I mean? Like when it's not real enough to take it as seriously as it needs to be taken.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. It's like one of the most common things that I hear is like I need to get results in magic. And for me, like talking to other practitioners, it doesn't really seem to be the results thing that is the problem. It's like the faith and the mindset, you know what I mean? So like you might get an opportunity or whatever, but if you're not in the right mindset, or if you haven't like communicated with these spirits to find out exactly like what you're supposed to do with that, you could flounder it, right? So like take like dating, for example. You could say to your holy guardian angel or like whatever spirit you're working with, hey, like get me, you know, go and get me a partner or whatever. And like you might match with someone, say on a dating app. And then you might be like, yeah, they're not my type or whatever. You know what I mean? Like in a flippant act of whatever, ignorance, shall we say, or being unaware that that was an opportunity. But then, like, if you would have spoke to them, they might have said to you, hey, sorry, yeah, like the app would only let me upload my old pictures. This is what I actually look like, and the spirit might have given you exactly what you wanted, but you didn't explore it. You know what I mean? So like, you have to use discernment in a massive way. It's like it's so important.
Yeah, if you want your stuff to land the way you want it to, you have to make sure you're not in the way of it landing. Like it's not going to do any good if you aren't humble to the point of being open, like really open to like how is this going to land, and open to and respectful and like really, really have a full belief in the intelligence and the prowess of whatever spirit you're asking for help.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting. Like you see a lot of people sort of like jumping around and working with different spirits because they didn't get results for the other ones, from the other one, sorry. And it's why I have like deep, profound respect for like the ATRs and any actually any tradition that venerates your ancestors, because it's like you knew that those people lived, you know their characters, you know like how they might help you. So there's already a degree of connection with them. But like if you're going to an angel, you might be like, well, I've only read about this angel in a book, you know what I mean? So I don't really know how it operates. So I think like starting with your ancestors is a massively like good thing, like hugely good thing. But a lot of people overlook them, you know what I mean? Because they want to work with like the big seven or like, you know, a Greek deity or something like that.
A lot of people skip right over their ancestors because they fail to imagine further back than a generation or two. And usually in the that those are the those the recent ones are the ones we're aware of being troubled. They were all troubled in some way, I'm sure. But like, if you think about the sheer span how many people are your ancestors? And if you think back to a time depth that's like, it goes back forever. Like, it goes back until it's not human, until it's microbial. So, like, you can, there are people for you. You know, like, no matter what your immediate family was like, no matter what atrocities are like, you know, or traumas or whatever are attached to your blood, like, can be worked with, it can be healed, and there are people that are in there who will resonate with you in such a way as to truly empathize with your life experience on a whole, like to understand it, because they also lived something similar if they're attracted to helping you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's really interesting, like nice little segue into the magical dead. Because like you don't know that your ancestors didn't practice. You know what I mean? Like, there's gonna be one person, at least one, and like I'm going on like bare minimum here, that practiced in the past. And for all you know, that ancestor could be influencing you to practice yourself, you know? So like by exploring ancestors, you get to tap into that generational experience. And if you think that if that ancestor, that one ancestor, was like the first ancestor in your like line that practiced magic, then they will know like the first steps to take, you know what I mean? And they would have been with you like the entire time. So they'll be able to look at where you've gone wrong, look at where you've gone right, and sort of give you that guidance. But if you're like shutting that door on them, then you're shutting the door on a limited, I guess, a limited way, a limited supply of wisdom. But that magical dead person can go and find other people for you. That'll be a good fit. It's kind of like, so if you had like a really controlling family member who would only let you be in relationships with certain people, you know what I mean? Like they're being like controlling in this case because they want the best of the best for you. So they can then go and find other magical dead who can teach you what you need to know. So you know what I mean? Like if there was like someone that was adept at say candle magic and you were just getting into candle magic, but your ancestor didn't work in candle magic. Say they were like a devout Catholic who was ridiculously effective at praying the rosary, but when it came to candle magic, they sucked. They're going to be like, well, I don't know how to do this, but I know someone who can, you know? So they'll just go and grab them and help you. But yeah, it's massively overlooked.
There's also even beyond individual ancestors who might be capable of doing that, there are you know, obviously a psychopomp, but even beyond that, there are guardian beings for all ancestral lineages. Like, everyone has ancestral guardians, and they are sort of, in a way, kind of responsible for the state and health of the line. So there are things you can do to like help feed and strengthen them, and in turn, then call them to attention to areas that need work, and they will help, and they will call in the right people that are really, you know, just glowing in the spirit and in angelic, and bring in your other ancestors to pray for the ones that need it.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. It's why I like sort of champion Catholicism so much, because where you have the sort of like holy dead, shall we say, it's sort of like you've got a patron saint for pretty much anything. So by connecting to that system, it gives you a way in, you know what I mean? Like especially if those saints were like prominent saints who had massive influence. So like take Saint Benedict, for instance. He opened up a crap ton of monasteries, which means that like he's got access to a whole bunch of dead who will help him. Like monks that he helped influence, like other saints that walked in his like walked the path of sorry, walked the Benedictine path, you know? And I think the last time I checked, there was like I think it's like 15,500 saints that came from the Benedictine path. So yeah, just using Saint Benedict as an example,
Not bad.
yeah, that gives you access to like yeah, 15, just over 15,000 saints who could potentially fill the role of helping you. So like talking about spirit allies and not having like, well, not having spirit allies and not knowing what to work with, Benedict is a really, really good place to start, and he's really, really important. But a lot of people overlook him and just put him down to his medal, which is amazing. I will champion that medal forever, and I will never stop banging on about that medal. But like just looking at him for his medal, you know what I mean? It's a massive underrepresentation of his prowess and his sort of footprint in the spiritual realms.
For sure. Benedict's cool. He was one of the first saints that I ever got to know a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. There's loads of really, really good saints that just get overlooked. But like one thing that I've realized is that like obviously they will help you if you're not Catholic or Christian and stuff like that. But like being a part of that current definitely opens up new pathways. Like it's been brought to my attention that people who say like want to walk the Benedictine path get a lot of insights into how Benedict can help them, especially in regards to more secret things as well. And a nice little sort of like synchronicity here is that a lot of people view Saint Benedict as a very Saturnian force, sort of like upholding virtues of discipline and limitation. And the aphorism in the Arbitel is the one in regards to secrets is Saturnian. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. His I like that I like that he was, essentially elected to a position of leadership and then was so disciplined and strict that the very people who demanded that he was their teacher tried to kill him with poison, which is another very Saturnine thing, is drinking the like surviving attacks from poison. I believe it wasn't it a bird that spilled the cup?
There was one where he did the sign of the cross over the cup and it shattered. The one with the bird was bread. I think they tried to poison his bread and the bird basically carried the bread off. It actually came back and then he was like, no, you need to take this bread away. And it did, eventually, after he like commanded it to do so in the name of God or something. But yeah, it was incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. And like what makes me laugh is that like we have these sort of magical implements in the form of like the Saint Benedict medal right in front of our eyes, you know what I mean? And people don't think to use them, or they do, but they don't tap into their full potential. It's kind of like using like the cross of Jesus, like the crucifix, but not getting to know the person on it, you know what I mean? And if you get to know the person on it, then you can tap into its full potential, which is pretty cool if you think about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that could be pulled from just from the accounts of his life and story that are like, very eyebrow raising as far as possible magical praxis. Curing leprosy, returning a dead boy to his grave after he rose from it. Raised either another boy or the same boy from the dead. Multiplied food. So in the Saturnian sense of there being like limited resources that need to be expanded, that makes sense. He did the same with oil. Yeah, there's a lot of things in there that I believe, are suggestive that if you put in the time and effort, there could be like many rewards that are henceforth little talked about when it comes to him.
Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting though, is that like magicians crave tech. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, what's the tech? What's the tech behind this or whatever? But like they won't explore the reasons why it works, or they'll be like, oh well, but like I'm gonna put like, I don't know, a Saint Benedict medal in some oil, for example, in order to do such and such with it. But they'll read the story, but they won't ingest the story. And I think ingesting that information can massively ramp up the effectiveness of the operation of which you're undertaking. But even saying that, like even using such language as like operations, like Benedict didn't view them as operations when he did them. And I don't think they really view them as operations in the Catholic faith. It's just, we're going to do this and it's going to work. You know what I mean? It's not like, it's not looked at in a very sort of like technical manner. You know, I think we can get lost in the occult with too much technicality behind stuff.
Well, I think it gives an excuse to sort of, it's like just going through the motion to achieve the result. I've heard magicians that are like, avid chaos magicians say that they don't really do devotion. And I find that to be crazy because I think how there's power in devotion. And being able to stretch yourself to so if you want to get the thing done, and even if you're just as a chaos magician, like I'm gonna in saying, hey, I'm gonna engage in the act of devotion, but basically only to achieve this result. Like that still works. You can, do that. But then what are you returning to? Like why is that like a detour on your everyday existence? I think ideally, if you engage in devotion enough, you realize that it is heart work that you're doing. And after you do enough heart work, you start to like lose the impetus or the motivation to go back to center and be like, oh no, okay, well, I did my devotion and for the sake of this thing, and now I'm going to return to center and be what? Selfish and separate from everything else again? Like
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
to me,
Yes.
it makes much more sense to slowly erode the barriers that prevent you from being devotional to every being that you work with in a way, in some form or another. There should be that reverence that, reverence is the word, right? It's because gratitude implies that you have received something and you are expressing thanks for that through your heart. However, reverence is something that arises simply through the astonishment and awe of what you're experiencing or of the being that you're in contact with or in relation with. And I think
Yeah.
that is a more pure and your more pure state and something that basically all spirits recognize as being a thing.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. I 100% agree on that. I mean, like, I think that's why working with your ancestors is so good, because you're dedicated to your bloodline, right? Like, well, some people might disagree with me on this, but whatever, I don't care. It's like, without your ancestors like wanting to have children, you wouldn't exist. You know what I mean? So like, they're gonna stand with you, like whether you have kids or not. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it matters, but like, carrying on your bloodline is the single most important thing. So like, honoring your ancestors and having reverence to the people that came before you is ridiculously important. But yeah, it was really weird. So like, when you were talking about sort of like dipping in and out of like certain currents, say as a chaos magician, like I went to Christianity in a chaos magic sense because I was under attack by stuff, and I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna do the sign of the cross over me and say the Lord's Prayer. And that worked really, really well because I threw my heart and soul into it. And it was basically like, came from chaos magic, stayed for the faith. You know what I mean? Because I realized that like the path of Catholicism, or like when you throw yourself into anything, not just Catholicism, that devotion matters. Because you might go somewhere and be like, yo, these people are actually really cool. Like, this is really cool and I totally vibe with it. But then you might jump out because you might be like, well, I'm just a chaos magician. Like, I can't stay here. Like, I need to keep my path, air quotes, chaotic, for lack of a better way of describing it. And yeah, definitely, like, chaos magic can be a way to find your path. It allows you that freedom of like non commitment. But when you do find that place of commitment, stay. Definitely stay. Make your home there. But yeah, it's kind of become a thing where people want that freedom, you know, they want that freedom to like jump around, but they don't necessarily in every case discover the fruits that that system could bring to them because they haven't explored it enough, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's like skimming the available materials and just like kind of cherry picking what might be useful in a practical sense. But I think you're right. I think everyone needs like a home, magically,
Yeah.
spiritually. There needs to be like a place that you know, like sort of in your heart, that if you haven't found it yet, you're still looking for it somewhere in there. And yeah, you know, again, like all kinds of personal issues can kind of prevent people from even recognizing it when it lands too. And something might knock on your door like several times before you're like, oh, okay, I get it. This is for me, you know. But overall, I think it's just a matter of whether or not someone, I think, matures in their practice or not. Because without that like foundation of some kind of home feeling, with either a tradition or a practice or a spirit, it ha I think things have a tendency to remain more self-serving and detached. More mechanical in nature and less artistic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's like there's one practice that I suggest to some people sometimes, depending on if it's relevant or not. But like they might say to me, well, should I work with this spirit? Should I build an altar to this spirit? And I'll have them build an altar to their self, like with a photo of themselves, like give themselves a glass of water every day, a candle. And one, it gets them used to working with spirits, like spirit upkeep. If you're going to go down that route. But it allows them to take that time to be dedicated to themselves enough. I mean, like, we take time to, like, you know, brush our teeth, shower, do all this kind of stuff or whatever. But when it comes to honoring our spirit, we don't do it. So, like, by taking that time to sit with yourself, and you can say mantras or prayers to yourself or do a whole bunch of other stuff, if you wish. And it just builds that bridge. And then after you do that, then you can be like, well, this is how I felt when I was devoted to myself. It felt really, really good. And it just allows that compass to localize on what makes you feel that way. Because like I was saying earlier, like doing magic and stuff is somewhat easy. You know what I mean? We live in like 2024, soon to be 2025. You can go on Amazon and pick up like grimoires that were like heretical to own. At a click of a button, like our ancestors did not have that ability. So it's doing the work on the self and being devoted to the self first, then being like, right, okay, well, now I'm gonna go on Amazon and order whatever, or I'm gonna like download a PDF. Not endorsing illegal downloading, by the way. Just gonna say that. But if you are sort of financially destitute, then sometimes that's your only option. So I'm not gonna sort of go against it either, in particular cases. But yeah, like the whole altar thing to the self is great. And then from that you can build your ancestor altar if you wish. Or just when you're honoring yourself, just say ancestors, all the people that got me here and be make me able, sorry, to have a devotion to myself. Thank you. I appreciate you. And then what that's going to do is it's going to facilitate those ancestors to draw closer to you, you know? And then you can feel their influences and see their influences and stuff like that. A
Yeah.
natural progression for me, sorry, I'll shut up in a minute. I'm yapping. But a natural progression for me from that is like being devoted to yourself and sort of honoring that devotion. And then if you're Catholic, if you're inclined to Catholicism, being like, well, I have a guardian angel that does this all the time, and I'm not talking to it, and I'm not honoring it. So maybe I'll get a little angel statue, or download a picture on the internet and put it in a frame, or just get a prayer card from like your local Catholic church. And every time you're doing devotion to yourself, just say like, hey, well, thanks, angel. Thanks for, because you do this all the time, and I don't give you any reverence, or I've never really appreciated you or believed in you. So thanks, man. You know what I mean? Then that's going to draw that spirit closer, which then opens up other doors. So by doing that one simple devotional act to yourself, you open up so many doors to so many different things, which I
It's
think is
so
great.
we have not talked about this at all, but I literally have a self-elevation rite in my ancestors course,
Oh, wow. Interesting.
where you spend a week doing that and putting a book under the altar to raise it up every day, and writing affirmations, saying affirmations and things. It can be a really nice way to sit with the feeling good about caring for yourself. Conversely, it can be a kickstart to shadow work. Like, you may sit down with a photo of yourself on a shrine and immediately be confronted by a lot of feelings that you didn't know you had. And that is also, like, I find a lot of the time our self-reflections have to do with ancestral echoes and influences of the unwell. And I would like to add just a caveat that there are plenty of ancestors that aren't in good health and aren't ideal to invite in and give offerings to, necessarily. And but simply saying honored ancestors with, like, the knowledge that honored means angelic, well in spirit, with, they don't need anything except they want to help. That can definitely eliminate any potential for, like, any accident victims or people that died with grudges who are, or, were murdered or whatever, are, like, stuck, and you don't want to invite them in necessarily, but it's, like, super, super easy to just say honored ancestors to create basically a metaphysical filter, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely, 100%. It's I think that's a really important point. The thing that you said about grudges is that, like, I don't like, just for anyone listening that may get confused by what Rev just said, like, if the ancestor did used to be a grudge bearer, but they're not anymore, and they learn that lesson, they could actually help you heal grudges that you hold against yourself.
Yeah.
So be careful with the way you word it.
Yeah,
I
that's
think saying,
why I'm saying you wouldn't say any of those things. You just say honored ancestors.
yeah, because it's like, if you say like, oh, anyone that had issues with bearing grudges, then yeah, then you're going to shut them out, and they're going to be like, hang on a minute, wait, what? Like, I can help you with this.
Need. No, it's
It's
a good distinction.
yeah, definitely. It's like, if you've got an issue, there's probably been an ancestor that's dealt with it, you know what I mean? So you can just call them forth, even if you don't know them by name. Or you can have like a whole sort of cohort of them to help you out with different issues, because the ancestor that could help you with the grudge bearing thing might not be good at communication and putting things forward with eloquence. So you could have another ancestor who could talk to them, or like communicate in like air quote spirit language, to then put forward the messages that you have, that need to be put forward in an eloquent way of which you would understand.
Word.
Yeah, it's all about teamwork, man. Teamwork is the way forward. And I think that's the entire point of ancestors, to be honest. Teamwork. But like, you're not relying on a spirit that has another agenda, you know? Like, Psalm 91 literally dictates, for he shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. So I think angels are a really good thing to work with, because it literally says in scripture That's what they do. But like, even then, they still have a quote unquote agenda because they want to make you ascend in holiness and virtue and all these things, right? So like, if you want to just start work and sort of not get immediate results, but see things happen like straight away, but you're not quite ready to take the leaps and bounds of growing in virtue that an angel might require of you, or like in the sort of angelic consciousness, like ancestors are definitely your best bet, 100%.
Yeah, I would agree. Don't go get a book on Goetia and probably don't go try to work with fairies straight off. I mean,
Yeah,
I don't
I
want to tell
think
anyone, but if you feel called to that and that's what you're gonna do, that's what you're gonna do. But ancestors are a great start. Angels are good because they definitionally, like, their aim is the aim of the universe. Like, they want what God wants. So that would be not what some people might think of when the word God is used as some authoritarian mono God. But the whole of the universe and the inherent intelligence therein that wants all creatures to evolve, to grow, to eventually be free from their suffering. Probably, who knows? But yeah.
yeah, definitely. It's actually really interesting. Like when I started working with angels, I found that like my relationships with other beings started working a lot better. Because it was like, oh, you're getting it now. You know what I mean? Like your understanding of the sort of way the universe works,
Yeah.
and you're moving in harmony with it, you know? Like I think like various sort of personalities and things in witchcraft. Oh yeah, people that are involved in witchcraft sort of go with the phases of the moon. So they're very sort of used to moving with the ebb and flow of like lunar tides. But then you can take that and then apply it to spirits as well, you know? So like they want you to move in sort of a similar tide, you know? So like that's why the Archangel Gabriel is so important, you know. Like working, if you're going to work with celestial spirits, Gabriel, because if you form a relationship with Gabriel, it can essentially teach you when to get rid of stuff, sort of when to bring stuff in, you know. But like one mistake a lot of people make when they work with, say, like the waxing and waning moon is that they might think, say, with debt, and they might think, oh, well, in the waxing moon, I need to like accrue loads of money, right? So I need to do a spell on the waxing moon, as yeah, the waxing moon to get loads of money to get rid of debt. But you can still banish debt, right? Like you can, anything you can do in the waxing moon, you can also do in the waning moon with just a bit of ingenuity. But yeah, I could talk about Gabriel for years. But I think my throat might give out before I stop singing Gabriel's praises.
Yeah, he's solid. I found what you were if it's not cool to bring this up, I can totally edit it out later. But what you were saying the other day when we were talking about the angels and how there's a lot of like sort of flippantness and essentially these beings are like they don't necessarily get the respect that they deserve some of the time because they do get cartoonified, and even like biblical angels became memes, which who knows, maybe that's their way of showing up in the world and reminding people they're there, but it also like does kind of echo to me like a sense of like, oh, it's just angels. Like I do them, a lot of magicians do them in the LBRP every day. It's like and I think there's like a really a tendency to limit their power in people's heads. Or you said that, and I completely agree.
No, it's completely fine to bring that up. I think a very human way to put it forward, or a very mundane way to put it forward, is like, yeah, you're calling these angels, like doing the LBRP or the LIRP or whatever derivative of that you wish to do. And they're like the four personalities that you're most used to, maybe in the early stages and maybe even the more advanced stages in the ceremonial magic. But like, it's kind of like when you start a new job and you have like the manager and the secretary and the manager of HR and another person who I can't think of at the top of my off the top of my head. And although you become accustomed to their presence, they do not lose prowess. You know, that manager still makes the decision whether you get fired or not. The secretary is the person that's going to answer your calls when you phone in sick. The manager of HR is the one that you go to when you have a problem with someone at your workplace. Like, they're still there and they still hold a very prominent role in your existence in that space. But it's very easy to look over them and forget them for who they are. And if you take that and if you apply it to your guardian angel, it gets way more interesting. Because it's like there's this Catholic exorcist guy, and I'm not sure how much of this holds weight, but they say that like the guardian angel is more powerful than like some of the most powerful demons. Or like adversarial forces. And when you think about that, it should make your mind blow up if it if you don't already have that view, or have had that experience. And I found that it can be entirely true. Like Pete, like a lot of Catholics sort of do the Pope Leo the 13th, I think it is, or Pope Leo III, I can't remember what it is. But like the prayer to Mikael, like defend me in battle and stuff like that, when they could just as easily call their guardian angel to punch whatever it is in the face. You know what I mean? Like, it's so simple, but very underutilized. And yeah, definitely do not deserve, they don't get the respect they deserve. Because I think some people like will jump to other entities and stuff when they're not getting results from angels. But I think when you have that realization that these angels are what they are, you know, and they do deserve that respect, then the work that you'll do with them will be a lot better, you know?
Yeah, I could go on. This is probably a whole episode, but I could go on and on about how I think people should do exactly that thing you just said, but with plants and fungi.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
So, caveat. Not caveat, segue slash revisiting something that I already said. Gabriel. Gabriel rules, well, is the angel of the moon, right? Yesod. So the moon rules growth cycles and herb allies. So yeah. Working with Gabriel basically taught me the importance of plants. I have a bit of tech which I'm not going to share on here because it's extremely personal, but it basically utilizes Gabriel with your herb allies. So yeah, it really makes things great. You don't have to, obviously, but I will say to all those listening, if you have a particular lunar deity that you work with, ask them to help you out with your herbs and see what happens.
That's interesting. I'm thinking this sounds like this feels like the moon knows plants well, so the moon can advise on plants because the moon regulates and oversees things. Yeah, I know like herbs are very connected to Jupiter in general. But I think planetary attributions with things, they get very artistic depending on the person, you know? And they're all it all is true. Like if you find a way in, then it's true to you and that's real in your world.
Yeah, definitely. The thing, okay, so like in on the subject, sorry, of like planetary correspondences to herbs and stuff like that, in like Kabbalistic magic, shall we say, or like planetary magic, I guess they're the same thing ish. Is that all that light has to come through the moon, you know? So at the end of it, at least in my understanding, Like, if you take the Kabbalistic tree of life, the light has to go through Yasod before it comes down to Malkuth, which is where the herbs are grown, you know? So, yeah.
That makes sense.
I hope it does. Sometimes I get a bit tongue-tied when recording things. So I do apologize, listeners, if I have been tongue-tied this evening, but I've been trying my best.
No, you're good. I don't know what to say now, though. Was just thinking, I was trying to remember what grimoire, which grimoire it is that has some plant attributions and things. I thought it was Sephiroth, but I was scanning through it and didn't see it. But it talks about like even with an individual plant breaking it down and like if it has thorns, then the thorns are martial, and like the petals and pollen are Venusian, and they break it down to like the individual parts of the plant, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, definitely. It's but if you think about it, like the physiology of the human, basically, right? Like we have parts of us that are attributed to Mars. We have parts of us that are attributed to every one of the planets, you know? So a plant is the same. It's going to be the same.
And by attribute, I mean like it's like the human attribution. It's like the co-creative process of us creating webworks of understanding that like in the spirit are actual avenues. You know, like so if belief can be created, then like there is some way that that's an actual thing, like an actual road.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a lot of sort of insight. I did Aaron Leach's Solomonic Magic course, and going through his lesson on creating talismanic waters, like planetary talismanic waters, was a great help to me, and really opened my eyes on the utility of plant allies. Yeah, it was really quite something. Really quite something, actually. But yeah, they're great. I think like if you sort of like go on YouTube and type in spell, you know what I mean? They might be like, we'll get some chili, put it on a candle, burn it over a picture of your ex, and you know, whatever. but under the more you understand about plants and allies and even spirits, you know what I mean? Like everything that we've spoken about tonight, basically the crux of it is, the more you understand about it, the better it's gonna be, you know? Like it's still gonna work if you don't understand it, but it just humans like to understand things. They like to understand how they work, you know?
Which may just be like the invention of further complexity.
Yeah, definitely. There's that thing in hoodoo, I think it is, where the original practitioners of hoodoo like couldn't read the Bible, but they knew the book had power, so they thought that even just owning a copy of the Bible was powerful. And there's like an old way of consecrating Solomonic Pentacles, where you basically open the Bible to the Solomonic sorry the Psalm verse of the Sorry, the psalm of which the versicle is attributed to, and then just leaving the pentacle in the Bible for like a certain amount of days, and apparently it consecrates it, you know? So like they might not have understood like what stuff was, but they understood that like laws of contagion and of like transference and things like that. So like
Were
we would
cutting.
explain.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. Sorry, go. Okay, it's fine.
They were cunning practitioners who didn't know how to read either, and they would also use the Bible. And the same thing kind of happened with the six, seven Moses, the sixth and seventh books of Moses. Is like people that couldn't even read it would just have it in their house, and so people would, especially I know in the like Pennsylvania Dutch communities in the States, the Amish, like. If like a powwow healer had one of those book a copy of that book, people were more likely to trust their that they knew what they were doing, even if they couldn't read it.
Really?
Yeah.
That is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the Bible's amazing for magic, to be honest. I think it's yeah. Well, it's a lot of traditions use it, you know what I mean? So it's
I mean, I'm primarily a witch and I use it. Like psalms are just part of the like cunning practice. And I kind of feel like a cunning person is just a witch who takes clients.
yeah, pretty much, yeah. It's really interesting, like that when you first get into magic or something, or some practitioners first get into magic, the last place they think to look is the Bible. But then when you get into like the more the other forms of magic, shall we say, like it comes to your awareness that the Bible is pretty much used by nearly every practitioner that I know. So yeah, it's incredibly cool. That's what I thought was
It's like
sorry.
it's currently being used. You know, that's why it's like it's relevant metaphysically to now and to the last several hundred or you know several hundred years specifically with our bloodlines and whatnot for a lot of us, but like longer too.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's I think a lot of people have try to avoid it at first. They like because it's not cool if you just walked out of it to go learn about magic. It takes some time to like dismantle stuff to be able to go back to it and be like, oh, this is like I can engage with this on my own terms, like on the way that I see it now with these eyes that I have like worked really hard to gain through other practices and other explorations and whatnot. But you know it's worth it to do that work and to go heal those parts of you that were like that are associated with like the Bible and Christianity so that you can like just not have anything that I guess gets to you. You know what I mean? Like it's way better to go through the work and then have access because you don't have to pick one thing or another. Like you can do whatever you want, as long as you don't like, as long as you don't feel like you can't, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's like the beauty of the PGM, isn't it? That like
Yeah.
all the syncretic syncretic practices and things in that, like it's the last place you would think that the name Adonai would come up, or like Sabaoth would be in the Greek magical papyri. Like if you didn't know anything, you'd be like, oh, this is how I'm going to venerate or like use spells of like the Greco-Egyptian gods, right? And then you're like, hang on a minute, Sabaoth, what? But yeah, Dr. Stephen Skinner like really sort of is great for this, because I think in his book, I think it's Techniques of Greco-Egyptian Magic and Techniques of Solomonic Magic. It basically goes through the history of magic and how magic basically came to be anyway. So it kind of squashes a lot of sort of anti-Christian sentiments and things like that, you know? So that's pretty
Yeah,
cool.
honestly, I'm not a big fan of his some of his stuff when it comes to that kind of analysis. But like, yeah, I mean, Adonai is basically Adonis, so it's actually it was actually like a Greek name before it ended up associated with anything Abrahamic.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I don't know. I think that the magic, it's always been there. It's been there since like humans have been here and before then, because we know that Neanderthals had circles of skulls of their ancestors, like magical circles, but this instead of stones, it was the skulls of their ancestors on the ground and in the ground.
Yeah, definitely.
Like that's they're doing they were doing stuff and they aren't even human. That was they were here before us. So like and you know if you look at the Psalms, like there's quite a few Psalms that are Egyptian or Greek, or at least heavily hypothesized to be And a lot of just the Bible in general is kind of like it's repurposed archetypal stories that existed in the cultures that influenced the Israelites, and like that's just how it works. That's just how it goes. It's just like how, every civilization that comes along, like they write into their cosmology that the new gods like killed the old ones or won a battle over the old ones or whatever, or imprisoned them or something. It's like they're writing into the but
Yeah, definitely.
like I definitely wouldn't, yeah, I wouldn't give, I think Catholicism used a lot of ancient tech and just kind of subsumed it. And in doing so kept it alive, but like the church kept it alive, in my opinion, only because it served them. It served their power, because the church like I think there's a good argument that could be made that that essentially like Rome hijacked Christianity and turned it into their like tool of empire. And I think like it's so it's like inherently troubled, like most things are in this world. But I think, I don't know, I find it inspiring how like readily you jump in and are willing to like focus on the good and really draw out like all the good things, because a lot of people choose to focus on all the bad things, and it seems like they're having like a lot less fun time, in general.
Yeah. It's the thing for me is that, like, okay, so fine. Like, yeah, there's a lot of crap about Catholicism out there, right? But like going full circle in regards to what we're talking about, which is interesting because we've basically gone full circle on the calendar year and now the sun's being born again today, is the fact that Catholicism kept it alive for whatever reason, but it gave us a way back. It was that single candle in the darkness, you know what I mean, that we could find. And then it would then show us a way back, and then we can explore, like, say, Solomonic magic and stuff like that. And it just gave us that way of accessing the old stuff. And like, wherever you want to go with it, fine. That's for you. Like, that's not for me to sort of like dictate someone's path or something. But like, I like it because it's almost like Catholicism put it in a neat little tidy package where I don't need to go and look at all the old connections. Obviously I have, but like I don't need to because it's all there, you know? It's like they've just put it in this thing and I can be like, okay, cool, I can work with this, you know? And I don't need to sort of explain it away with like, well, this used to be a Greek god and this used to be this and this used to be that. Like, yeah, I have done. And I can do that because I know some stuff, you know, not everything. But it's just a fact of like even the mass, you know what I mean? Like doing the mass is an incredibly powerful ritual. And that's there for anyone to use should they want to learn how to do it. Like the prayers to the guardian angel is there, the prayers to like everything else. Like you've got what? Necromancy, celestial magic, chthonic magic, should you go into that if you want to do it, all in a neat little package where you don't have to really do much to access it. I mean, like, we essentially all get a free initiation into Christianity when we're young, depending on where we came from. So it's not as if you have to go out and like seek a teacher to initiate you into the system. You're already in it, so you may as well make use of it, you know what I mean? But like it opens the door. So like as we were saying about like discovering sort of like spiritual allies and stuff like that, like by shedding that light on what Christianity is and what Catholicism is, or at least what it is now, that can then open the doors to all your possible spiritual allies. But it doesn't mean that you have to stick with Catholicism, but it's just a really, really good way of learning the wheels, so to speak. With like say necromancy with saints, celestial magic of angels. And yeah, even like in a more Wicca sense, like devotion to the god and the goddess, like say Jesus and Mary, or like God and Mary, or whatever, you know. It's just a really, really good system that is basically plug and play, like if you want to do it, you know. But a lot of people don't look at it like that. They're just like, oh, I'm just gonna like hate it because of X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, hang on a minute, you've literally got like temples everywhere. There's Catholic churches everywhere. that you can go into and you can experience it. It's not like this sort of like not obscure religion, but not even a dead religion, but a lesser practice religion that you have to seek out some really old transcripts, and then you don't even know if it's been tampered with, and you don't even know if the tech is good. Pick up a rosary, pray the rosary. You know what I mean? Like, that's tech right there. You don't even have to have the physical thing. You can just like go online, say the prayers. And I mean, if you're ever looking for like a way into the quote unquote mythology, just walk down the high street looking like minutely gothic, and there's probably going to be a Christian who's going to give you a booklet and tell you where the local church is. So it's you don't need to do anything. It's all there. So it's kind of lazy in a way. But yeah, it's incredibly good. I think it's great. But it just takes a bit of being open, you know? Like, you can essentially get a class in Solomonic magic, or at least the training wheels of Solomonic magic, by observing a local mass. Like the purification of the temple, the exorcisms of the candles, the blessings and blessings of the incense, you know what I mean? Like the Psalms, like it's all there. But no, people want to not do that, and they want to kind of bite their, was it something about removing the nose to spite their face, cut off their nose to spite their face. But yeah, definitely for any like budding Solomonic magicians, just learn a Catholic mass, or go to a Catholic church and do that. And you're like, by the time you come to do Solomonic magic, you're essentially going to be like head and shoulders above like other practitioners who chose to reject Christianity or go to it in a different sense.
Yeah, and I think from like a chaos, purely chaos magic perspective, it is the most practical thing to incorporate, even surreptitiously, even heretically, into your practice, because there are literally, it's like there are batteries everywhere, like of power. And it doesn't have to just be Catholic. Like, it depends on, what it is, but it can be just the Christian current in general. But for me, the jailbreak was recognizing that, like, from an animus perspective, like the intelligences that animate the forms of the spirits in the Christian pantheon, essentially, are all older. Like, they've all been around for the most part. They're just evolving and taking on new forms or interacting with this new forms. And I think seeing them as like they want to be there, they want to be present in the world and willing and able to help. Once I started to understand there's real intelligence behind these things and that religions are temporary but spirits aren't, that's where it opens up for me. Like, okay, so they're just beings who want to help, and they made sure to put themselves in a position that they're readily available and like to anyone.
Yeah, definitely.
If someone can listen to their heart and their intuition more than the dogmatic doctrines of the actual church.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Yeah, like, although I practice Catholicism, I don't follow Rome at all. So I guess I'll be deemed a heretic, but I'm practicing it from a magical perspective, rather than what is currently taught in the church. One thing I will say, though, as Rev said, in regards to like the spirits that live under the spirits, like far older spirits. So, like, when it comes to syncretism with, like, say, saints, even archangels and things like that, is I would learn how to work with the saint first before you go on a syncretic journey, so you can know where the saint ends and the spirit begins.
That's excellent advice.
Because you could open yourself up to a whole world of interesting circumstances if you don't, you know? Like there's a what is it? There's some stuff in regards to Saint Sebastian, where people try and paint him out to be something that he's not. It's with all saints, but Saint Sebastian came up recently for me, and it's like if you approach that spirit and you kind of tell it what it is, you're probably not going to get a good response from it. Whereas if you kind of get to know the saint and then sort of see the mask, sorry, see the spirit underneath the mask, then you're going to get a better response. So yeah, it's just a way of fostering good spirit relationships. I mean, there's probably going to be people that disagree with me, but there's people that disagree with people on everything. So it is what it is. But like some people equate Hermes from the Greek pantheon or Mercury from the Roman pantheon with Saint Expedite. He's quite a well-known folk saint, so a lot of people work with him, even if they're not Catholic. But it's like I would say work with Saint Expedite and Saint Expedite first before you start equating him with like Hermes or something like that. I think it's really, really important.
Word.
Yeah, quite the chat about spirit allies and stuff, and maybe Rev would agree with me, but I don't even think we've scratched the surface on these subjects at all. So, yeah, I think wrapping it up here would be a good thing to do. But yeah, last word from me is go and talk to spirits, do a crap ton of magic, and change your life. Because you certainly can. But yeah, hopefully, some of the things we've spoken about today will give you some insight or some tools on how to do that. And yeah, it's been a pleasure. And thank you all for listening. That's over and out from me.
And yeah, I would like to say when the sun is out, catch it while you can, and don't be afraid of the dark. And we will, yeah, we'll see you soon. I think we're gonna make this a thing. So prepare yourselves and have a lovely Christmas, everyone.
See you later.